Okay, welcome everyone. So today we are starting our practice modules. So the next seven modules of our program will be 2 weeks long each. So we'll have quite a lot of space to explore each of these topics and to kind of dive into the subject matter and do lots of practice and all kinds of stuff. So I'm really excited to be kicking off with today's call. This is where you're going to really start to, over the next seven modules, get the real kind of feel for practicing this work with your clients. Okay, so the idea with this curriculum part of the program is that you have enough to be practicing this with each other, to try this out maybe with some clients that you're working with, and you start building on every previous module. So our first three modules were all about the theory and trauma-informed coaching, the approach that we're taking to self-doubt, and we're just going to keep building on those building blocks and take everything with us into the next module. Okay, so the program is designed as a kind of continuous process rather than disparate modules that aren't related to each other, if you like. Okay, so what we're going to do today, we are just going to check in around practice pods. We're going to talk about the aims of this module, and we're going to talk a bit about how we're splitting this topic of the root causes of self-doubt over this week and next week. There'll be an opportunity for someone to get coached by me, and we'll do a little bit of breakout group work as well. And we'll also set some intentions, ideas, ways you can take this into your practice pods as you start to meet. Before we get going, I just want to let everybody know that our SBCA's sort of support group or study group is meeting on Thursday. I know for those of you who are based in the UK, it's a bank holiday. We won't be recording those sessions as a rule, but the first one is about kind of how to run a practice pod. So Scott's going to spend some time just talking about what we've learned over the last couple of years of running these, how to get the most out of that. And we will be recording that portion of the session. But generally, you can just come along to those practice pod sessions. They'll run every week that there is a module call. You can bring any questions about any modules to any call. You can just drop in and listen in, or you can bring your own questions or specific clients or any of that stuff. The idea is that there isn't really an agenda for that session. It's more about what you want to talk about. And should you at any point want Scott to come to your practice pod, you can just let him know that and you guys can figure out a time to meet and he can come along to your practice pod and chat to your people. So the idea here is that as much support as we can give you, we're here for it. Okay, so ask for what you need, ask your questions. Don't feel like you've got to wait to figure stuff out. Just kind of dump it and let us support you. Okay. Anything you want to add, Scott, to any of that?
I was just going to say that as far as the practice pods, it's ultimately going to be up to you, but what we're going to cover on Thursday is essentially what it might look like as far as if you like them that are a bit loose, we can, sort of talk about that and what that looks like. If you like things that are a little bit more structured, what that looks like as well, and just some nice tips to make it really valuable for you guys. So I hope you all can make it.
Yeah, cool. And I guess that's the thing. What we have found is that some groups like to have a bit of structure and they like to meet, regularly, others less regularly, less structured. There's no right way to do this. And part of this is that you get to negotiate with your practice pod mates about what is going to work for you, right? So that's going to be, sometimes that might be a little bit awkward, right? You may feel like, oh, I'm going to have to ask for what I want and what I need, and how's that going to be met by other people, right? So all the stuff that, you know, self-doubt stirs up, we're going to be playing with in these pods. So let it be a little bit uncomfortable if it needs to be, to see where you get to, okay? All right, so just before we dive right in, I just want to check, because everyone knows what practice pod they're in, who their practice pod mates are. Have you all kind of made contact or arranged to meet? If you are here and you haven't yet, just be the leader and email your people and organize to get that kicked off, okay? We recommend that you meet this week or next week to really start this process, because what can happen is that the longer you wait to meet, the more you're likely to start feeling like you're behind. That is a story. You're never going to be behind, right? Because this work just unfolds at its own pace. But I want you to get to a place where you're, you know, you feel like you kind of know when your people are meeting and all of that jazz pretty quickly. Okay. So if you're here and you haven't had contact with your pod mates yet, put a note in your to-do list to make contact with them straight after the call, get that kicked off. Okay. All righty. So let's talk about the root causes of self-doubt. I think, honestly, this is like, it's one of my favorite things to talk about, because I think it really is like the secret sauce to this work. One of the things that I have found is that when we really help our clients to understand why self-doubt is showing up, often that can be enough for their healthy self to come up with new ways of showing up to their self-doubt, new ways of being with their own discomfort. Okay, so what we tend to do in coaching, right, is we go straight for solutions, right? Someone says, this is the issue, and we say, let's come up with a solution to solve that. When we start to actually explore the problem, it means that we're coming at this as self-belief coaches from a completely different approach, right? We're not that interested in the solution at this point. We're interested in understanding what the real problem is, okay? So we're going to spend the next couple of weeks really exploring this, where the root causes come from, how to recognize that, what to kind of do to sort of elicit that information from your clients so that they hear themselves expressing that and making sense of that. And I think this is really going to support you as you start going in with your clients in just a deeper, richer approach. Okay. So there's two parts to this module. One is about uncovering the client's biography, and the second part is about uncovering their specific protective beliefs. Okay, so this is what we're interested in when it comes to the root causes of self-doubt. So uncovering the client's biography, what we mean by that is answering the question like, what happened to you, right? What are your experiences, the events in your life, the relationships that you've had, like what's happened in your life that has led to you experiencing some self-doubt now, right? And secondly, when we're uncovering protective beliefs, we want to understand a bit more about what did you make those events, those experiences, those relationships mean, right? Because memory, as you will all know, right, memory is a bit of a slippery thing. So if any of you have had a look at the life map process, it's quite interesting to consider of the millions of different experiences that you've had in your life, why are the ones that you've remembered, why are those the ones that you've remembered, the ones that are on your life map? What is it about those events that have made them special, important, necessary for you to kind of count them as profound enough memories or important enough memories to be included. Right? When you just think about the so many different memories that we have, what are the ones that we choose? Because all of these things, both what happened to us or our clients and how we made sense of it, this is what helps to create our self-concept, right? Our sense of who we are. I'm this kind of person. So this week we're going to be talking a bit more about, you know, how do we get inside the client's biography? And I'm going to do some coaching to kind of demonstrate how I do this with clients so that you can take this and run with it, right? You can use these questions and approaches with your people. And next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, how we get to those really specific protective beliefs that our clients hold. How do we start to really understand what it is that those protective beliefs are made of? Okay. So the reason that this is important, necessary, useful, like why the heck do we spend our time doing this, right? I'll just stop the share there. There's a couple of really key reasons here. One is that there is always going to be a really useful and important and just an interesting, damn good reason why self-doubt is showing up for our clients, right? There's always a reason for it. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's never random. Even if it feels disproportionate or illogical or overly emotional, even different words that I've heard clients use to describe their experiences of self-doubt, there's always a really good reason why it's there. But our clients are unlikely to know exactly why this is happening. And that's because our responses to self-doubt, the way we take care of ourselves when it happens, becomes automatic. Right? So one of the ways that we started to talk about this in module one is around, you know, the self-doubt loop. What actually happens when we experience self-doubt? Yeah, so we're contemplating a task of some sort, and our self-doubt, our protective self-doubt, acts like a smoke detector, right? And as soon as it senses some kind of psychological risk, it goes off. It sets off that alarm. It's like, this is risky. Don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself. Hold yourself back. You know, stop doing what you're doing. It's going to create a sense of discomfort. Right, body sensations, difficult emotions. You may hear a voice in your mind, or you may just get a kind of sense of no, or hold back, or stop. And you may also have memories of the past when this has happened before. You may experience kind of projected images of the future, often a worst case scenario. Right, some of us get a combo deal. And this alarm and this discomfort can happen very, very quickly, like within a few seconds. But what we do is go, oh, something's wrong. I've got to resist this, right? And so we go into those protective behaviors, perfectionism, procrastinating, paralysis, etc., right? And before we know it, we've found a way to kind of comfort ourselves from the discomfort, but we haven't actually made any progress on the task. And so we can create this pattern from this alarm. This alarm goes off, the pattern comes up, and we're just like, oh, I'm the sort of person who doesn't finish things, who doesn't do conflict, right? Who can't have difficult conversations. I can't promote my work on social media. That's the kind of person I am. It becomes our self-concept. So I just want to make sure you can see this. So as self-belief coaches, we are super interested in what is setting that alarm off, right? That alarm is all about some kind of protective belief that the client has. Some root cause has created a protective belief for the client, and that has set off the alarm. And the way that I think is really helpful to think about this is that our alarm is an indicator of a sensitivity to risk, some kind of psychological risk, right? So that there are seven main risks. There's probably more, but the kind of big ones that I see all the time are rejection, conflict, success, judgment, failure, complexity, and disappointment. So even as I read those out, you may find yourself having a little body sensation in response, right? Oh, that feels a bit risky to me. I don't want to take any action that would potentially incur disappointment, rejection, judgment, for example, right? So as self-belief coaches, we want to ask this really fundamental question, right? Why is self-doubt alarm being activated? What happened to you? There's a damn good reason for that. So why is there some sensitivity around a particular risk? What led to that? Does that make sense? Yeah. So just as an example of how this kind of works, and one that I talked about on the morning call, say you're a marketing coach and you work with people around marketing. And you've got clients that can't take action, right? They are super excited about sharing their business. It's their heart's work. This is the dream. And then when it comes to actually doing the doing, something happens and they can't apply what you are sharing with them. So they're contemplating marketing. An alarm goes off, right? Don't do this. You might hurt yourself. The discomfort requires them to take care of themselves. So they resist that discomfort, resist doing the task, take care of the discomfort. And then it forms a pattern. I'm not someone who can be visible. I'm not good at marketing, right? It becomes a belief, becomes a way of understanding yourself. This becomes your self-concept. Now, most coaching is about sorting out the solution to the marketing problem, which is a marketing strategy, right? Let's give you some tasks to do. And when you have some self-doubt that comes up, just don't feel that. Knuckle through, right? Find a way to fight that. And we all know that that actually is a really quite difficult, and it's actually quite a punishing and I think a really violent way to go about anything, right? If you have to go into battle with yourself to do something, we're not doing it the right way. So we want to get interested in what is setting the alarm off in the first place, right? We want to solve the right problem, because the problem isn't anything to do with the marketing strategy, because otherwise, no, you know, that wouldn't be the thing that's holding them back, right? That's not the problem. The problem that's holding them back is something is going on in their self-concept about what's risky. Yeah. So for us as our self-belief coaches, we want to get really, really interested in the root cause of what's created that alarm. That means that we help our clients solve that problem, which means they can get out of the loop way, way faster, right? We're not interested in mainstream coaching, which is how to hack your procrastination. We're interested in how do we stop you from feeling like you're at risk? Because all you're doing is posting on social media and you'll probably be okay, right? So we want to support our clients to be able to move through their lives feeling resourced, feeling like, yeah, whatever happens, I've got my own back. Yeah. Is this making sense to everyone? Yeah? Cool. So the thing to know about this alarm, right, this smoke alarm that's going off, It's very personal and subjective and specific to every single one of us. Right? So how one person experiences disappointment is going to be different to another. It's reminding our clients, whenever that alarm is going off, it's reminding the client of some kind of past hurt. And it's saying, don't do this, you'll hurt yourself again. Right? Hold back from taking this action. And it tells us something about the client's risk sensitivity. Right? So the alarm goes off and we start to get some insight into what is creating some sensitivity for the client. This is why I think this work is so important, is as soon as our clients are experiencing self-doubt, we get the opportunity to help them make sense of that. So we're moving towards the thing that a lot of coaching will say, don't even worry about that. You've just got to concentrate on the action, right? And what we're doing is something quite different. Now, our clients are unlikely to know why the alarm has gone off, right? And that's because this resistance is quite built in, right? Our self-doubt has no kind of excitement about us knowing why you're experiencing this. Our self-doubt is like, I just want you to stop doing what you're doing. So as soon as you start looking at it, your client is likely to start feeling some resistance. This is normal. There's a lot of automatic assumptions, right, around that our clients will make up about who they are. So they're in this loop of self-doubt, and it creates the sense of, oh, this is who I am. I don't finish things, right? I can't do conflict. I'm not good at marketing. So when you're assuming that automatically, there isn't much room to look at why or what else might be true. So those assumptions can stay unquestioned for a really long time for lots of people. So our clients don't necessarily know why they're experiencing self-doubt. There's this resistance. There's a lot of assumptions about this is just who I am. We never question that we have other choices. Right, we might kind of sort of have the sense of, well, I don't do conflict, but I don't feel like I've got a choice in that. That's just who I am. Right, and they may not feel resourced to change their response when that comes up. Right, so they may not feel like, oh, I can actually make an intentional choice about what I do here. And that's usually because that experience of self-doubt, when we're in that loop, it happens very fast, right? Just a few seconds sometimes. And then, you know, you start off where you're like, right, I'm going to send this difficult email, and suddenly you're doing the laundry, right? Can happen really fast. And we're not conscious of what's going on. It's quite sophisticated, yeah? And this might be kind of reminding you of your own stuff, right? Where your own self-doubt shows up and how you take care of yourself. So we want to help our clients to really understand that no matter where they're approaching this from, no matter how little insight they have into their own experiences or how much self-awareness they have, even if they, you know exactly what's caused it, that they may not have really looked at this in the here and now in a way that can really support them. And that's what we want to do. We want to bring in some curiosity, some compassion. Nothing's gone wrong. You're doing a great job of taking care of yourself. And now we just want to look at, well, what is causing all of this? What's the really good reason why this is a thing for you? Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about the root causes of self-doubt, the three different categories that come up, and just some sort of top tips to look at. And then we're going to move into some reflection and some coaching, okay? So Please know the chat is open if you have questions or anything you want to share as we go. That makes for a lovely interactive session. Okay, so there's three main sort of types of causes of self-doubt. And it can be really helpful to just have these in the back of your mind, just so you kind of know only one of these needs to be present for self-doubt to be activated, okay? So the first one is past memories, right? How did I protect myself when I felt like this in the past, right? So this is going to often be connected to survival strategies, right? Some kind of risk presents itself and we go into, how did I protect myself when I felt like this in the past? And then we respond from there, right? The second one is psychological safety, right? How safe does it feel to be myself right now, to be vulnerable, to take risks, to make mistakes, right? So if there is a lack of psychological safety or a perceived lack of psychological safety based on the conditions of the group you're in, then that can kind of foster some self-doubt, an experience of self-doubt. And the third cause is the current context, right? So what am I thinking and feeling in this moment? So even if there is some safety for the client, right? Even if they feel they're in a team, perhaps in a work context where they do feel that it's quite safe to make mistakes, even if there isn't a past memory that's connected to some kind of self-doubt, if the current context is based on a feeling of, oh, there's something's at risk here, that can foster some self-doubt. So it might be that the first time you're presenting something to a team in an organization, right? And you're kind of like, oh God, I've done this presentation 100 times, but it's the first time with this particular group of people. And maybe someone ignored you in the communal kitchen just before the meeting, right? So whatever's going on in that current context, we can make it mean, oh, there's some risk here. And so that will kind of, you know, without that that conscious awareness, we'll just respond from a place of trying to take control of that discomfort. Yeah. So something to think about is that only past memories are really able to be coached, right? Because psychological safety happens in a group context, right? It's not happening in the coaching session. And a current context for the client will be reported on afterwards, right, in the coaching session. So it's only the past memories that the client can bring to a coaching session. And this is where their survival strategies can be involved as well. Right, so we just need to be aware of when our clients are sharing their experiences of where their times when they've experienced self-doubt, that we're just conscious of the survival strategies that may be on display. So they can say things like, yeah, I presented to this team, but this person ignored me just before I went into the session. So I made it mean that they weren't really interested in what I had to say. So I just rushed through it. I just kept on talking and rushed through it, right? So that's one of the survival strategies that we'll use, right? Is we just keep on moving forwards without pausing to be in our bodies, right? So we can coach on that. We can explore that in a coaching session. Are these contexts kind of making sense to people? These are the ways that our self-doubt, the kind of conditions that will kind of foster our experiences of self-doubt. Yeah. Okay. So this is what happens, right? This is what creates our experience on an ongoing basis. This is how it feeds into our self-concept, is that those three different contexts, the current context, the sense of psychological safety and past memories, they all get filtered through the client's meaning making, right? So there is the objective thing that happened, right? And then there is what the client made that mean. So this is what happened to you, and this is what you made that mean. And that becomes the protective belief. That's the stop sign that says, don't do this, you might hurt yourself. Yeah. So this is how it's kind of connected up. And we can really help our clients to just make sense of this. Oh, so this happened. You were protecting yourself because you made it mean this. And this is the belief that formed. Right? So I know this is a little bit heady. What I want to do is kind of bring it into a really grounded place so it kind of starts to make sense, right, of how this might show up in a specific kind of coaching call client context. So let's pause there for a second. What I'm going to do is we're going to do a little reflection exercise. Just for a few moments, just to get some raw material to play with. And then I'm going to ask someone to volunteer to get some coaching. And we're going to use the ways that I kind of start to ask questions about the client's experience, how I start to bring those past memories into the current coaching container so that we can work with them. Right, I just want to give you a really good example of how I do that, and then you guys are going to practice a little bit together. All right, so I just want you to start to think about an area of your life where self-doubt is showing up for you right now. Right, could be a particular area of your life. Maybe it's a specific belief. It might be within a relationship. It could be a kind of long-standing way of being or a behavior that you just know is sort of holding you back. Might be in your coaching business. Just write this down for yourself. I highly recommend doing this on paper rather than trying to do it in your head, just because you get to claim it then. So just name it for yourself. Where is your self-doubt showing up right now? And write down some bullet points. What is that experience like for you? What do you think about it? What do you feel about it? What do you do or not do? Maybe filling up my water bar. Okay. Try not to overthink it. There'll be no right way to do this. But just for everyone to have a little example somewhere in your life where self-doubt's showing up, and some words that describe what that's like for you, what you think about it, what you feel about it, what you do or don't do as a result. And if you feel compelled, please raise your hand, write your name in the chat, or use the little reactions button, just so I know someone wants to volunteer, and we'll do some exploration. Oh, Barrett, looks like you're in. Love it. Okay. That's very, very cool. All right. So what I'm going to do, Barrett, is I'm just going to ask you some questions about the situation, and we're going to explore what's going on. right? And for those of you watching, I just want you to notice, and I'm going to give you all the questions that I'm going to ask. There's only sort of five of them. But just notice, like, what opens up for Barrett as we go. And we'll see where we get to, okay? All right, lovely. If you can unmute yourself.
Done.
In the seat of courage. Love it.
That's the American way, right?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
It's crazy. But yeah, whatever.
Whatever. So tell us a little bit about where self-doubt showing up for you, Barrett.
First off, I was really keen to do this right now, but I just noticed how my arms are feeling like shaky now, and like everything's, I don't know, something weird is flowing into my arms. Like, I guess that usually happens with my arms. I don't know. So what's going on? Yeah. I think I mentioned this before, like sometimes, okay, first. The area I was focusing on was work and just financial independence. Yeah, my own career pretty much. So I guess some of you know already, like we moved continents. We're in America now. I've got two kids trying to figure out lots of different things at the same time, as in where are we going to move to? When can we move into our own place? How are we going to do this whole making money thing work while also caring for all children, all that kind of stuff? So, and it's the easy solution for, say, my husband to just get into like his line of work and make a bit of money. At the same time, I don't have, like, there was a break in my coaching business. So now, I don't know, I guess my confidence kind of plummeted. Like, okay, I had a good routine going, but right now it's like, okay, can I really make this happen? Let's get back on the horse kind of thing. Just going back to my notes. Yeah, questions like, can I really make this happen? Why did I give up on my routine, even though I noticed that it was actually like impacting me in a good way? Yeah, I was doing, I mean, like 10 minutes of yoga in the morning just to, you know, make me feel good physically, and then also meditating to get me in the right mind space, head space, whatever. But there's so many different loose ends at the moment that I guess I put me and pursuing this and work kind of last. And making sure that everything else is covered, like helping out the people that we're staying with at the moment, looking after the kids, having my husband's back so that he can do some work. Meanwhile.
So what's this like for you? Like, just as you're describing this, like your kind of your routine has gone a little bit, your like your security, your base of a home, a job, certainty, like those things have gone right now on a temporary basis.
Yeah.
Like, what's that like for you?
I think it's like what I'm struggling with the most is how we're dependent on other people right now. Like, that's my biggest issue at this point. And there's a lot of things that we just have to, we kind of have to sit in it and wait for other things to happen for us to be able to take action. Well, this would be like too much to go into the details, but there's things that are just not up to us, but to other people. And they first have to get the ball rolling. Once that's done, we can take action.
Right.
And just, also, like, I'm super grateful because, so we're staying with friends, but I also feel the guilt of, you know, like, we have to give back, and we do, like, we do monetarily in a way, like, financially, but also we try to give in, like, our time and, like, physical labor a little bit. They run a farm. Yeah. So, but that's limited because I also see that, well, we're going to get totally trapped in whatever's going on with them.
Yeah.
Only focus on them and not focus on us. So we have to negotiate where to set boundaries.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And then, yeah, sometimes I just feel like bad for, like, I just did right now. I'm taking the car, I'm driving to that little town that we're close to, just to be away from everything and have, like, a not a safe space, but like quiet,
yeah,
and feel detached from everything else, because otherwise I just can't focus, and I feel like it's really hard to tackle anything that's complex. And I like, the whole running a coaching business is complex in a lot of ways, so and like doing it all by yourself is complex.
As I'm hearing you speak, Barrett, I'm just writing down some notes just to kind of capture what I'm hearing. So at the moment, you're in this season of your life that's full of uncertainty, dependence, and waiting.
Yeah.
Right? And I heard you say, like, with your home state at the moment, there's, like, this kind of push-me-pull-you of guilt and gratitude.
Yeah.
Right? And then with boundaries, do we focus on other people? Do we focus on us?
All of us, all of, on everything at the same time.
Yeah.
Somehow. I don't know.
Yeah. And there's also this thing I'm hearing in you, like, a wanting to connect, right, to your work, to your family, to yourself, but also the detachment, like needing some space, needing some quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I don't know, like, what feelings come up for you as you think of all of this?
My chest feels very heavy.
Yeah,
this is interesting. If I'm honest to myself, sometimes I'm like, am I using, like, motherhood and all of that as a shield to not go out there and really do this thing and pursue it? And is that why I know I don't really have contact with a couple of these people, that one friend in particular, but I know that that was a big issue for me, and it has always been very triggering for me, because I'm like, why aren't you going out and, like, working? Why aren't you doing that? And here I am wondering if I just load too much on my plate, so that in the end I can't succeed or whatever. Or I feel, since last year, end of last year, I feel like I have been told to put things on hold because there's so much uncertainty at the moment that I should just, and at the same time, I'm not generating the amount of money that we need to move forward. Like, how do you negotiate all these, I don't know, like, they're contradictions.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm seeing, is there's a lot of, like, pushing and pulling at the same time. I'm wondering if this, when I hear you speak, what's coming up for me is a sense of overwhelm.
Yeah, and I guess maybe because it is a lot at the same time, and I think I'm making my peace with just going slow, and there is a piece of me, like a part of me, that believes that it'll all work out. I just need to be patient and it will work out. Same as with my work, like when my routine was still in place, I kind of, my self-trust that things will work out and that as long as I keep going, I will succeed, was much stronger than it is right now. And I'm kind of,
that's the thing that can happen, right, when there's a lot happening and a lot of it feels out of our control, is that, and I think it's interesting, like you said, well, am I using this current state of flux and uncertainty to not do anything?
Does that
feel true to you?
I felt there was, like, 2 weeks ago or so, I was able to do lots of stuff at the same time, and it kind of felt empowering because I felt like, hey, well, am actually doing it. It is possible somehow.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, it, there's then times when I just feel like it's, yeah, it is all too much. It is overwhelming. I don't know if I can do all of this at the same time, because it's like,
yeah,
mentally and physically exhausting to be doing all of this at the same time. And but then when I slow down, I feel like, yeah, maybe then I start comparing myself at some point, thinking that, oh man, but look at other people, and look at, they're doing it. Maybe. Well,
so this is the thing that can happen, right, is when we do feel overwhelmed, we then wait until everything calms right down before we do anything.
Mm.
Or we kind of, so that's one way of doing it, right, where we're like, I'll wait until this feeling of overwhelm goes away, and then I'll start taking action. Or we can end up kind of going into this all or nothing type state, right? Yeah. We sort of do a lot because you have a bit of a surge of energy, and then you feel a bit overwhelmed again. So you kind of feel like, oh, I've got to rest now. And then you go back to doing nothing.
Yeah.
And I guess I wonder, like, stay it, because at the moment, right, this feeling of uncertainty and dependence and waiting, right, this season of your life,
yeah,
that isn't going to last forever, probably, right? That's unsustainable as a way of life. And so I'm wondering, like, is there a sense that actually, if I did create some space for myself, I could do something?
Yeah, and I guess when I think that, then I feel, again, like, found out or guilty, or I don't know, like, I could be doing more, but I, like, victimized, like, I'm victimizing myself,
yeah,
sort of, like, saying that, you know, I always have to be the one flexible, like, and flexibility to me doesn't mean that I'm going to have your back and, like, build my schedule around your schedule, like, that's,
yeah,
happened a lot lately. Yeah, and that does not feel good.
So that's interesting, isn't it? Like, the idea that, well, actually I could do something, but somehow that's going to probably inconvenience other people.
Hmm.
Like,
yeah,
is that maybe something you might be protecting yourself from?
Inconveniencing other people? Mainly as far as the whole living situation is concerned right now. Like, I just notice how I just don't feel comfortable in this space anymore, because I'm holding myself down. I'm just trying to be not too present so as not to be in people's way or whatever. And I don't like how that makes me feel. And like, it kind of sweeps over me and affects other parts of my life as well, because I noticed that when I go other places, I just feel so much lighter.
Right.
And right. Like, I can't wait to change our living situation, actually. Yeah. So.
Well, and so this is the thing, like, I'm wondering if this reminds you of anything, like just this state of being where you're kind of in flux, you can't really take up a lot of, you don't feel like you can take up a lot of space. You don't want to inconvenience people. Like, does that remind you of anything?
That's so interesting how that works sometimes. So I had this thought just then. I had this thought pop in my head. When I was 18 or something, I don't know. Like, there was a very stressful period over many years, actually, back home. And then when I was done with the school, I went to Australia, and even my parents said, like, you couldn't have chosen a place further away from us,
mm-hmm,
than Australia, because it was halfway around the world. And I felt relieved in a way, because, yeah, like, I guess I had more space to breathe and just, yeah, like, be me without the responsibility of looking out for other people. And, having to be concern with how they feel about whatever. And
So I'm wondering, like, how this current situation makes sense
In relation to what I just talked about, or
like does that help you see, like, oh, this makes sense, like, actually when I'm, you know, when I feel kind of constrained and overwhelmed, I really need some space.
And taking that space, I guess, like, it's a bit of a struggle for me to just go, okay, I'm gonna take the car and leave you later, like, but it's just a 10-minute drive. But actually, when I was driving here, I'm like, I was behind the wheel, I'm like, whoa, this is so nice. So liberating.
Well, so notice that, right? Like, you did this thing where you just made a decision, named what you needed, made a decision, and then took action to kind of advocate for that need for yourself.
Yeah.
And you felt liberated.
Yeah.
This is so nice. I can breathe.
Yeah.
So it feels to me like there may be a connection that you're making, that what I'm observing is there's a connection that you're making that somehow, given the current circumstances, that is too hard for you to have that need met.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's so many, like, variables, or just, not dependencies, but I don't know, so many aspects to consider and take into account. And like this morning, like, spontaneously, tasks will pop up and then we'll be asked to help out. I'm like,
yeah,
but we had at least somewhat of a, like, a loose plan that involved me having some time to myself. And now you're being asked, my husband, you're being asked to help out with that. We don't really know when that is going to happen. And that affects what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that means that I'm looking after the kids again. Yeah. So.
So, and so it's just good, like, it's good to know, right, that we don't want to solve the wrong problem, right? So when you started talking, it's like, well, the problem is, like, how do I set up my business and what's my financial security for the next however many years, months going to look like? And actually, you know, as we've talked about it, what I'm sensing is that right now the need is for some space for yourself on a semi-regular basis. And that's the problem to solve.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's essential to your being, you.
Yeah.
For you to function within these constraints.
Yeah. I think, because you mentioned the word advocate earlier, or advocate, because I have been talking about how I want more structure, like, not just in terms of, you know, let us put together a budget, because I'm not all airy flimsy all the time. I do appreciate structure. And then also let us have, like, a weekly structure, schedule, whatever, and make sure that everyone gets the time they need. Like, you get your time, I want you to have your time, but so do I. And I think
this is between you and your husband, you mean?
Yeah, it just takes, I think it takes me a lot of energy to just keep asking for it, because I know that that is what I want. I'll bring it up, but then I do push for stuff, but sometimes I'm just out of energy to keep asking for it again. And I, as I'm saying this, I shouldn't be asking for it. I can just let them know this is what I'm going to be doing.
Hello, there's your healthy self.
This is what I'm going to be doing, and let's make this work so that it's okay for all of us.
Yes. So you've just solved the problem.
Yeah.
Beautifully. I'm going to be stating, this is what I'm taking. This is the time I'm taking for myself today.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
it's good to know, because I know that this is inside of me. I like have that strength. I know that it just gets buried sometimes, or I forget that I have it, and it's good to reconnect with it, because it's not like, these are all old issues or whatever they've been with me for a while, but then, man, this is just a constant, not struggle, it's constant work to keep, you know.
Well, and doesn't it make total sense that this is coming up right now, right? When time is actually a really precious resource for all of you right now. So, like, nothing's gone wrong, right? Your protector is coming up and saying, you can't ask for what you want, right?
Why is that again?
Yeah, exactly, right? Notice how that shifted for you.
Yeah.
Like, you're actually, it's actually fine for you to ask for what you need and then negotiate that.
Yeah. And even as I'm sitting here, I'm like, oh my God, I'm boring everybody. You know, like, this is like in my head, like, don't take up other people's time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's annoying.
You've done beautifully. You've and listen, like, this is probably something that you've been carrying for a few months now, at least, right?
Yeah.
So you can take up some space to share this. That's okay. Yeah. We asked you to, right?
That's true, and I was true.
Yeah.
I came prepared, because that's what I'm annoyed with myself sometimes, that I don't. I don't show up by not being prepared. So,
So this is the thing, like, now your energy can go into, all right, I'm going to ask, you know, I'm going to negotiate the time I need. That's the problem I'm solving. And that will, you know, that space is your oxygen to come up with ideas and think about what your next steps are, and everything else gets to flow from that.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Just got to be more persistent, I guess.
Well, you, and this is the thing I would encourage you to think about, is how do you want to show up to that, right? That's something to just to take away and think about, like, how am I going to do that? What's the best way for me to advocate for my need here?
That's a good one.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Vera. That was a beautiful example. Thank you. Really, really cool. How great is that, folks? So good. So, so good. Okay. So what we're going to do now is I'm just going to share with you the questions that I asked. Five questions that we just kind of went through, and we went with the pace of the client, right? So we're just interested in the client's experience. What, you know, where is self-doubt showing up? What is this like for you? What risk might you be protecting yourself from? What does this remind you of? How does this make sense? Right, so our whole approach to this is nothing's gone wrong, right? Nothing's gone wrong. You're doing what you need to do to take care of yourself given the current circumstances. Yeah. So what we're going to do just for 15, 20 minutes is coach each other on these questions, right? We're just going to get into pairs. I'm just going to, okay, everybody's back. Anyone want to share anything that came up, anything you observed either as the coach or the coachee that you want to share? Yeah, Lorraine.
Hi. So I was coaching, and I was just saying to Scott and Charlotte, it's just that it's difficult not to jump into solving the problem.
Yeah.
That was the chat. I wasn't actually aware I was doing it. But it was obviously that I was. So I think that was interesting. It's just, because you just want to offer, help them find a solution, even if they're finding it themselves. And I guess the interesting thing is, even if they find a solution, unless they actually unlock what caused the self-doubt in the first place, they might have the solution temporarily and do something, but that self-doubt is still going to be there.
Bingo. You've got it. Yeah, exactly right. And And I think this is what can happen, is that we've really very easily, right, because we get excited when our clients come up with something and we think, yeah, that's the solution. And we're like, then we're both on the bandwagon, right? And I think there's so much to be said, even though I totally appreciate, I love that you brought this up. It can be a kind of, you know, self-management for us as coaches to go, is that the solution though? Like, have we articulated the problem? And what I would offer is you're going to get really good at knowing that, right? Really good at knowing, oh, that's the belief, right? And it's creating this behavioral response. You know, and you kind of, you'll feel your way into it. You'll be able to spot it really fast as you go. So, yeah. And sometimes we need our clients to kind of catch up as well, right? If once you start seeing, particularly I think if you tend to work with folks who experience a lot of the same kind of challenges, right? If you work with a particular client group, you will probably find that you're very good at quickly getting to the root cause. And part of our work is to help our clients get themselves there. So yeah, totally appreciate that. Anyone else find that? They're like, right, let's move into a plan. Yeah, cool. Anyone else want to share anything that came up? Oh, good. Magic. Yeah, Charlotte.
Oh, no, just we actually ended up, I hogged all the time being coached, but it was just like that little penny drop, and it's I'm not sure what's unlocked there. I've got this like, there's a little nugget somewhere that's going to help me make sense. And there's also like sense of relief that I've realized like social media feels like my homework did at school, right? Like being told to do it a certain way.
Right.
I didn't do it. I was like, you can tell me off, it's fine, like I'm still gonna do okay at school.
Yeah.
Like, I don't subscribe to your rules about this.
I love and it.
It's like
your teenage rebel is in charge of your marketing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't subscribe to the rules. So it's like, do I need to find a way to find my own rules around it? Or do I just need to go, do you know what? This is a necessary evil. Stop being a teenager and be a business owner. So yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, I just thought social media homework link is quite hilarious for me. So
right? Thank you,
Lorraine, for helping me with that.
Love it. Love it. Well, and it can be fun, right, to just keep playing with the same thing, right? So whatever you brought to today's session, you may want to carry that forward into, you know, our next couple of modules and just use it as an example to play with. And see if you can get to a place where you just feel kind of differently about it. You want to do different things because you've changed your relationship with it. Yeah, magic. Great. Great insight, Charlotte. I'm excited to see where that takes you. It's really fun. So folks, the thing to take away from today is that part of our work is about helping our clients to make sense of their past experiences, no matter how recent, and how that those past experiences have led to a risk sensitivity that's showing up for them in the here and now. Right. So once we make sense of that, and we can kind of approach that sensitivity from the healthy self, then we get to kind of support them to move through it. Yeah, Lorraine, did you have a question?
Yeah, it's just when you said a past experience and you said no matter how recent, I mean, a lot of things you need to say, oh, it's stuff that happens to you when you're 6 or 7. So are you just saying it could be anything?
You've got absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, like, and you'll find this, right? Like, we love a bandwagon, right? So over the last few years, I've seen a couple of them. Inner child work, trauma-informed work, right? All of that stuff's great. What I've found is actually our self-doubt, past experiences of self-doubt, sure, it can be related to our families. Our teenage years are often, as Charlotte's beautifully demonstrating, massive sort of experiential periods where we're making sense of who we are. But it also could be a relationship that you have in your adulthood, right? So and that's part of this curiosity, is I wonder what's happened and I wonder where this has come from. And it could be quite recent, right? I know I've worked with a lot of folks who are in corporate leadership roles, and often the last boss they had before they became a leader, manager, team leader type person, they took on that first kind of staff management role. The relationship that they had with their last, most recent boss can have a massive effect on how their self-doubt shows up, right? So this is like an adult person. It's happened 6 months, a year, maybe a couple of years ago, and that's what they're carrying in. I don't want to be like that person, or I really want to be like that person, or something in between, right? So all of it's up for grabs. We're all influenced by all of these experiences. Yeah. So play with these questions, right? As you kind of start to just explore self-doubt, maybe with your current clients, with yourselves and your practice pods, that kind of thing. If you haven't yet, I would recommend doing the life map, just because that exercise in particular is going to give us quite a lot of fun raw material to play with over the next while, over the next 2 or 3 modules. So it's worth doing. And next week, we're going to be looking at more of the meaning-making stuff, the real specific kind of protective beliefs and how we can help our clients to articulate those. So this week's really about that kind of direction of travel, like what's happened and what did you make it mean? And next week, we're getting into that real, like, what are the protective beliefs that have fallen out of that meaning-making? Okay. So have fun. If you're in the UK, have a lovely long weekend. Enjoy that hereditary privilege that we celebrate with so much pomp and circumstance in the UK. Our queen has been on the throne for, is it 70 years? I think it's 70 years. It's a ridiculous number. Honestly, if there's something about toxic productivity that we need to look at, it's that we require a 92-year-old to show up to work on a Sunday. Anyway, but I'm sending you all good things, and take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next week. All right, take care, everyone. See you.